Welcome to Dynamo's Dozen, the podcast that I bring you each and every single week, where I will talk about whatever may be on my mind, from pro wrestling, sports, entertainment, music, movies, muesli, fresh socks and jocks, and everything in between, never forgetting the talc. This is Dynamo's Dozen. Welcome to Dynamo's Dozen, the beautiful voice of Sinead O'Connor. I have a great show for you today, but first, a word from our sponsors. Today's episode of Dynamo's Dozen is brought to you by Kelly's Mountain Brew, five of the best alcoholic beverages that can be found anywhere on the planet. Let's start with Pride, the most amazing pilsner that you will experience in your life. Or Revenge, a ruby porter that will keep you coming back for more. Or how about Justice, a pale ale that will put some color in your face. Or Revolution, a red ale that will put hair on your chest. And last, we've got Redemption, an IPA that will kick your ass harder than the Iron Sheik. All Kelly's Mountain Brew beers are available at all good off-licenses across the country. And for more information, go to kellysmountainbrew.com. All Kelly's Mountain Brew beers are vegan-friendly and can be enjoyed no matter what your taste. So you are very, very welcome to this week's edition of Dynamo's Dozen. I don't have any guests for you this week, but I have myself, your favorite host, and I'm going to talk about a lot of different things today. What's going to be coming up on today's show is I'm actually going to implement something that should have been done a long time ago, and it's going to be called Dynamo's Dozens, which essentially means that I'm going to list 12 of my favorite different things from professional wrestling, or it may be music, or it may be movies. But this week, it is going to be pro wrestling. I'm going to mention my top 12 favorite managers, and I'm also going to mention my top 12 favorite entrance music from superstars across the years. So it is going to be it's going to be good. You can it's a little bit of fun. If you don't agree with it, that's fine. But these are my personal preferences. So I'm going to pick my top 12 favorite managers and my top 12 favorite entrance music themes from workers and wrestlers that have... might not even be workers or wrestlers. It might just be managers. Who knows? You never know. But before I do go there, I would just like to give a shout out to my sponsors, like I said there earlier, Kelly's Mountain Brew, the best beers that I've had in a long, long time. I'd also like to mention that if you do enjoy the show, please go to iankelly800.podbean.com, subscribe, and we're also available on all good podcast hosts, should I say. Like iTunes, all Android devices as well, and as well as that, we have a mail list. So if you want to get in touch with me and you want me to talk about something that you think would be interesting to hear, go to dynamosdozen@gmail.com. That's dynamosdozen@gmail.com, and you can mail me anytime about anything, and I will try my best to bring it up on the show, even if you call me a motherfucking cunt. So yeah, let's get the show rolling, babies. Let's go. First of all, on this week's Dynamo's Dozen, I want to take you to Thoughts from the Deep, and something I saw today which really disgusted me and made me feel fucking physically sick was seeing Mr. Liverpool, Mr. Jamie Carragher, spit on we have all seen it. He spat on a 14-year-old girl and her father from his car because he was getting banter that he didn't like because Man United beat Liverpool 2-1 at the weekend. Now, I'm pretty certain that if that had been John Terry, or if that had been anyone else from a team other than Liverpool or Manchester United, then he would have been hung, drawn, and quartered. So, Mr. Jamie Carragher, shame on you, you piece of shit bin dipper. I hope you get all the karma in the world at this moment of time, because that was such a piece of shit move, and I fucking hate you. So there we go. And I always actually thought that Jamie Carragher was a good pundit, but he really, really let himself down today. So, also, getting on to more cool things other than football. Fastlane happened last night, which was pretty good. If you don't want to know the results or any spoilers, well then, I would recommend pausing this for about 30 seconds or so, and then let me tell you exactly what happened. So, Breezango and Ty Dillinger defeated Mojo Rawley, Chad Gable, and Shelton Benjamin in what I thought was a pretty decent match, to be fair. Nakamura defeated Rusev. I thought it was a good match, but I thought that could have been a lot better, personally. Especially the fact that the two of them are so over at the moment. Randy Orton defeated Bobby Roode to win the United States Championship, which I'm delighted that they're actually trying to do something with Randy Orton now, because it's ridiculous that he's just been left in the wings and doing absolutely nothing. Natalya and Carmella defeated Becky Lynch and Naomi. And the Usos versus the New Day ended in a no contest because the boys came down and absolutely crucified them. That's right, the Bludgeon Brothers came down and absolutely crucified them. It went on, it was a segment I reckon that had about 10 minutes on its own. It didn't really fancy the angle, to be honest with you. I thought it was a bit stupid. Went on for a bit too long. I thought Xavier Woods overselling was a bit of an issue. I know he got powerbombed onto the steel stairs, but it was just, to me, it was just a little bit ridiculous. And then Charlotte Flair and Ruby Riott had a really good match, I thought. It ended by Charlotte retaining her SmackDown Women's Championship via submission. And it was, it was a pretty good match, actually. I thought it was a really good match. And then AJ Styles defeated Kevin Owens, John Cena, Dolph Ziggler, Baron Corbin, and Sami Zayn. So that was your main event. So, like I say, I don't do wrestling reviews. I just give you a little rundown of the matches. And to be fair, I thought that the main event was good, but I thought the semi-main event, the preliminary with Charlotte Flair and Ruby Riott was really good. Ruby Riott really impressed me, I gotta say. I thought she was absolutely phenomenal. And I thought it was a fairly good show. Decent show. Decent pre-Mania pay-per-view. And we will talk about Mania a little bit later, because now we know it's all kind of, we got some clarity on what we're going to see at Mania, so therefore I will get into that in a little while. But what I want to do is I do want to bring you Dynamo's Dozens, and that's, like I said, it's going to be, and that's what I'm going to call it. I've just came up with that now on the spot, literally. It's going to be called Dynamo's Dozens, and I'm going to give you two different versions of Dynamo's Dozens. I'm going to have my top 12 favourite managers, and I'm going to have my top 12 favourite entrance musics. And see what you think. And if you want to debate that, if you think I'm wrong, if you think that you could add something to it that I may have left out, or that I probably should have put in, well then get on to me. It's iankelly800.podbean.com, iankelly800.podbean.com. We're available on iTunes and all great podcast hosting sites. Or if you want to mail me directly, it's dynamosdozen@gmail.com. That's dynamosdozen@gmail.com. So, let's get straight to this new one, Dynamo's Dozens. So, if I'm going to pick my top 12 favorite wrestling managers of all time, this is going to be an interesting one. I'm going to start at number 12 with Paul Bearer. And the only reason that I'm picking Paul as number 12, because I do know that he was a phenomenal manager, especially with The Undertaker. I didn't see enough of his work in the likes of World Class and Mid-South to kind of give him a higher ranking. But I have him at number 12 because I thought the work that he'd done with The Undertaker was just unbelievable. I don't think that that gimmick could have got over as much as it did without Paul. And I do believe that he is he definitely deserves a place in this list. Then for number 11, I went for Mr. Fuji. There is no way in hell that I wasn't going to have Mr. Fuji not in my top 12. He could have went up higher as well. It was very, very difficult. So I have him at 11, should I say. And his work from like all like 75 upwards was unbelievable. You know, as we know, Fuji worked in Georgia Championship Wrestling back in 75 with Tanaka, and that's when they debuted, and wrestled some great names like Bob Backlund and Jerry Briscoe, and was some phenomenal matches there. But for me, his managerial career properly started in 1985. So he did retire in 95 and he became a heel manager. And he wrestled every now and then, to be fair. But as a manager, the way Fuji used to blind his opponents by throwing salt in their eyes, I just thought it was just something that was so new. It was such a new concept and it's so legit. The black tuxedo and the bowler hat, and it was just really, really good. You know, I know his first client was, just giving you a list of some of his clients, George Steele. And here's one for you as well, actually. Fuji used to team up with Steele and would wrestle Hulk Hogan and Mean Gene Okerlund. And Mean Gene even pinned Fuji. So that's how good a worker Fuji was. Even though he was a legitimate wrestler, he was willing to take the fall for a lot of great guys. He wrestled well. No, he managed Don Morocco, as we know, in 87. He got the contract of the Demolition, Axe and Smash, and he managed both of those guys. He managed another favorite tag team of mine, the Powers of Pain. You know, he really did have a great persona. The Orient Express, which are one of my favorite tag teams as well. Also the Berserker. I just thought he definitely deserved to be on my list of managers, because as we know, he's a legendary ribber. Some of the amazing stories that you've heard of Mr. Fuji, ribbing guys are there for anyone to find on YouTube and all. I'm not going to get into it myself because I wasn't part of it. I just love hearing some of the stories that he had. Some of them were probably a little bit mean, but I thought they were fucking brilliant. So, Mr. Fuji is number 11 on my list of top 12 favorite professional wrestling managers. So number 10 for me is Mr. Brother Love. That's right, Mr. Bruce Pritchard, who began working for Paul Bosch out of Houston, Texas at 10 years old. So this man was involved in wrestling from the age of 10. And even at 12, he worked as a ring announcer and sometimes as a referee. One of my favorite managers personally, because it was the era that I grew up in. His first appearance was in 1988, and he debuted his brother Love as a red-faced, effusive, boisterous preacher type character dressed in a really cool white suit and a tight red shirt and white tie, who claimed to preach not the word of God but the word of love. And everybody knows that he was best known for his distinguished catchphrase, "I love you," during which he would he would say on numerous occasions during his promos, and I really thought he was phenomenal. As we know, Brother Love as well was in the introduced to the WWF by Bobby the Brain Heenan, who you will hear about later, on a segment on the syndicated show that WWE had, the Brother Love Show, and he would interview wrestlers, and some of those interviews were absolutely incredible. We saw Earthquake squash Hulk Hogan's body in one of those interviews, very much like the Piper's Pit, but it was really, really good. And he's also a guy known as introducing the Undertaker into the world of WWE, so he's got that on his resume. He used to work as well, obviously, with Ted DiBiase, Million Dollar Man, DiBiase used to be Brother Love's main benefactor, so it was a great time in wrestling, and Brother Love really had to be on my list. I found it hard to choose between Mr. Fuji and Brother Love, because it's much of a muchness for me, and maybe Fuji has definitely worked with more people, so his list of clientele would be probably a little bit longer, but I just think Brother Love deserves to be on this list, and it's my list. So there you go. And Mr. Brother Love is in at number 10. And number 9 on the list might be a bit controversial for people, and there's probably going to be a lot of disagreement here, but for me, it is Dutch Mantel, a.k.a. Zeb Coulter. One of my favorite workers, but also one of my favorite minds in wrestling. If you haven't heard his podcast already, We the People with Dutch Mantel, you really need to check it out, because it's absolutely phenomenal. Reason I chose Dutch here is primarily because of how great a mind he is. I thought his work with Jack Swagger was absolutely unbelievable when he came back. But also some of the stuff that he'd done back in the day in NWA. I know he only had a year run in the early 90s, 1990, I think. But he did also work as a manager in the WWF from 94 to 97 under the alias of Uncle Zebakoya. And he managed the Blues Brothers, and he also managed Justin Hawk Bradshaw as well. So a lot of his stuff is really good. The network allows you now to go back and watch all that shit. So I would recommend going back and watching Uncle Zebakoya or Dutch Mantel, whichever the fuck you want. But all I'm saying is he's number 9 on my list. Number 8 on my list, without a shadow of a doubt, is Sherry. It's without a shadow of a doubt, Sherry. Sherry is, for me, one of the best workers in wrestling of all time, regardless of whether she's a male or a female. She is absolutely unbelievable. Having had some amazing feuds, like managing Randy Savage and Ted DiBiase. I remember after WrestleMania 5, when Sherry went at Miss Elizabeth, and they had a brawl between obviously Liz's ally Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage. It was such good TV. And throughout the mainer, like in 1989, then Martel and Savage feuded with both Hogan and Elizabeth. They were great times. I remember Hogan and Brutus Beefcake defeated the team of Savage and Zeus, and after the match, Elizabeth knocked out Martel with Martel's purse, and her and Hogan and they cut Martel's hair, which was pretty phenomenal. But I mean, having a top list of, and even if it was a top, you know, a top 10, which it's not, it's top 12, you cannot have Sherry outside of it. And I think even if it was a top 5, I'd find a way to squeeze her in, because if you look at her work even with Shawn Michaels for that year from 92 and 93, when she managed Shawn, it was unbelievable. The whole little mirror gimmick that they used to use, where they would Shawn would look in the mirror while Sherry held it up, was just absolutely great TV, but also great chemistry as well. And I think Sherry was that good that she really could have. I'm convinced that Sherry could have worked with anyone, to be honest with you. I think she was just that good, and there was no way that she was not getting on my list. But I guess we get to number 7 now, and number 7 is going to be J.J. Dillon. That's right, J.J. Dillon, known primarily for his work with the Four Horsemen, a mouthpiece, but an absolutely amazing mouthpiece. Also got a great podcast himself as well, which I would recommend checking out. Great worker back in the day as well. I did go back and watch some of his matches, but he is most remembered for being a manager. He guided, you know, lots of guys within the NWA to singles and tag titles. His greatest success obviously was the Four Horsemen, especially when it was Ric Flair, Tully Blanchard, Arn Anderson, Ole Anderson, Lex Luger, and Barry Windham. And after leaving WCW in 1989, Dillon also served as a front office executive for the WWF until 1997. So he'd done his time in WWF as well, but he returned to WCW as an on-camera commissioner back in 97 until 1998. And in 2003, Dillon had a short stint as an NWA representative in TNA. There is no way that I couldn't put J.J. Dillon on my list, purely because I thought his work on screen was absolutely phenomenal, and he knew his stuff so much so that he was given a job even for a few years in WWE. So he always knew his stuff. Number five is going to be Paul Heyman. Pretty easy for all you guys, because you all know exactly who the hell Paul Heyman is. Paul E. Dangerously. Phenomenal manager. When you look at his body of work, you know, in WWE, especially over the last, you know, 10 years plus, even as a commentator, he was phenomenal. And as a writer, he was phenomenal. But, you know, managing Brock Lesnar then in from 2002 to 2003, the chemistry between the two was just pretty phenomenal. And even as a general manager, he was phenomenal. But as a, you know, as a general, and hence even as a general manager, you would say that's a manager. So therefore, his list of credentials there to be on this list is pretty high. But I thought his work with CM Punk was absolutely phenomenal. And then his work with Brock Lesnar, when Brock obviously requested him manage him when he came back, was also phenomenal. So Paul Heyman definitely makes this list. And he is in at number 5. Number 4, we're getting to the championship rounds now. I like this. We're getting to the championship rounds. Number 4 is none other than the Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart. That's right. Anybody that doesn't have Jimmy Hart in their top list at all doesn't have a clue about professional wrestling. Jimmy Hart is in the top 5. Because, right, well, let's look at it. He worked in Memphis during the late 70s, all the way through to the year of Ian Kelly's birth, yours truly, in 1984. And the King brought him in, obviously Jerry Lawler. And he also worked with guys like King Kong Bundy, Ravishing Rick Rude, Lanny Poffo, Jim Neidhart, Ox Baker, Kamala, Randy Savage, Eddie Gilbert, Kevin Sullivan, Orange Sheik, and of course the Hart Foundation as well, especially when he went from Memphis to WWE in 1985, because when he managed the Hart Foundation, they were one of the hottest tag teams of all time. He also managed guys like, you know, Greg the Hammer Valentine, as I say, done King Kong Bundy as well in WWE, Honky Tonk Man, just unbelievable. I mean, Jimmy Hart's work with you know, the Hart Foundation when they were kind of bouncing off the tag team of the British Bulldogs, when they had, of course, our boy, Captain Lou Albano, and you know, it was just incredible. And I do know that I've missed one. So it was number 7, and I'm gonna get to number 7 now, which is my fault, which is unfortunate because of my bad writing. So I do apologize to each and every single one of you guys and gals. Number 7 was Captain Lou Albano. And the reason I have Lou Albano in my my list is because he did manage the Bulldogs for a time. And I think Captain Lou Albano was just unbelievable. Captain Lou Albano helped make that transition for the likes of Cyndi Lauper to come into the business and really do well at it too. I thought Albano was just, he was a great mouthpiece as well. Great talker. Loved the vodka, apparently. So, there we go. But Lou Albano was my number 7, so I do apologize for that. But number 3 on my list is going to be self-explanatory. It is Classy Freddie Blassie. Freddie Blassie, a manager that everybody that grew up in the 80s, or sorry, you know, well, grew up in the 80s, yeah, but also that would have watched wrestling in the 90s, you would have always seen the ads where Blassie was just sitting there, you know, talking about his love for the wrestling business. This is a man that went from 1918 all the way through, well, he was born in 1918, but he was an absolutely phenomenal manager. His career, after, because he was also in the war as well. He was a sailor, and he literally built his gimmick on that. He worked for Jules Strongbow, and because he was in the California territory, he constantly went there. But then in 1953, for about 7 or 8 years, he went over to Georgia and worked, and he worked for Paul Jones, and he had some he was part of some amazing shows. You know, he was always part of the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. For example, he worked with guys like Gorgeous George, who was an absolutely legendary wrestler, Johnny Valentine, Nature Boy Buddy Rogers. So of course he would have been around people like Luke Tez and guys like that. He worked all the way to through the 60s as well with WWA. And which is World Wrestling Association, by the way, sorry, my apologies. And had some amazing you know, matches. He beat Edward Carpenter, which he was a phenomenal wrestler, and that was his first ever championship, WWA championship title. And he also successfully defended the title against the former NWA champion, man I just mentioned, Lou Tez. And during that same title reign, in a match against Lord James Blairs, a fan threw acid on his back and he had to return immediately to the locker room to watch it off. So that shows you how legitimate wrestling was back in the day. Motherfuckers would throw acid. In fact, fuck that. Motherfuckers would bring acid into an arena to throw it on somebody. That is what you call heat, motherfuckers. And that was brilliant. He also said that he made Reigns Fabien into the... he turned Reigns Fabien into the celebrity he is today. And for anyone who doesn't know, is Philbin had a late night weekend talk show in San Diego, and Blassie would routinely show up to tell all the audience, throw furniture, throw shit around, and threaten Philbin as well. So it was phenomenal. I mean, he worked in Japan, worked in the WWE as we know. He feuded with San Martino and Bobo Brazil, and had some great stuff as well with Pedro Morales as well, for the title. So, Freddie Blassie, without a shadow of a doubt, gets into my top three. And number two is, without a shadow of a doubt, Jim Cornette. How could I not have Jim Cornette in my top managers? Jim Cornette is somebody that I remember as a kid. I absolutely hated the guy. He, you know, he done his job so well that I just couldn't stand seeing his face. I'm pretty sure most people are the same. And Jim Cornette, obviously, everyone knows the story. Jim Cornette came into the business as a photographer, guy who just absolutely loved the business. And before, like, his managing debut, you know, and his tribute was even to Jim Barnett. Jim Barnett, the great, great wrestling promoter. He decided to use the name James E. Just as a tribute, because that's how much he loves wrestling. He managed Sherry Martel. And the fact that his first gimmick as well, given the rich kid turned jabroni wrestling manager whose clients kept firing him after one match because he was the spoiled rich kid. The most notable, like, in that angle, by the way, I would check it out. Dutch Mantel again was there, Crusher Broomfield, who was obviously one man gang, Mr. Akeem. And over, like, the space of nearly 2 years, he managed Jesse Barr and Adrian Street, who everyone knows as one of the most colorful and exotic type wrestlers that we've seen within the business. Worked with Ollie Anderson and all that as well. And then obviously in Mid-South, he worked from 83 to 84. Some of my favorite stuff personally was the stuff he done with the Midnight Express when they debuted in Mid-South. And after a few, the first kind of few weeks in the territory, they faced Magnum TA and Mr. Wrestling 2. And at a TV taping, they had like a contract signing for like an upcoming championship match, and the Midnights and Cornette attacked Magnum TA and tarred and feathered him. And I thought that was absolutely unbelievable. Everything that man done, I thought, turned to gold, and he's still gold. to this day. So that's my number two. And my number one, without a shadow of a doubt, because I'm sure you've probably been sitting there, guys, listening to your favorite podcast host on the planet saying, "Dynamo, where is Bobby the Brain Heenan?" And there was only ever going to be one. Bobby the Brain Heenan is, without a shadow of a doubt, the best manager and the best mind on the mic and on the outside of the wrestling ring. Make it just unbelievable. I don't doubt for 1 minute that anybody would disagree with what I'm about to say. I do believe that Bobby the Brain Heenan isn't only one of the best managers of all time. I believe he's one of the best workers of all time. You watch his in-ring work, he could bump better than anybody. He could sell better than anybody. And he was just unbelievable. And I'm not even going to go into detail about who Bobby the Brain Heenan managed, because everybody knows exactly who he managed and how good he was. I absolutely love Bobby the Brain Heenan. And that is my list. So, from 12 to 1, we've got Paul Bearer at number 12. At number 11, it's Mr. Fuji. At number 10, we've got Brother Love. Number 9 sees Dutch Mantell take his place within the top 10. At number 8, we've got the sensational Queen Sherry. At number 7, it's the Captain Lou Albano. And at number 6, we've got Double J, J.J. Dillon. Number 5, we've got Paul Heyman. And at number 4, coming in the top 5, it's Jimmy Hart. And at number 3, it's Classy Freddie Blassie. And at number 2, it's the Mouth from the South, it's Jim Cornette. And number 1, the late, great, best, Bobby the Brain Heenan. So now I'm going to get on to my entrance music, and I'm going to shout this out real quick, because this isn't going to be a long episode of Dynamo Dozen for you guys and gals. Next week, I am going to be announcing another special guest. I want to thank you all for taking the time to listen to the honor that I had and pleasure of bringing you Harley Race the King last week. And Harley Race is going to be on the show again with his son Leland. I'm going to be interviewing both of them together. So that will be coming up over the course of the next 6 to 8 weeks. And we'll see what happens there. But that is going to be a guarantee for you guys. You're going to hear more of Harley Race. And if you want to give me any questions that you would like to put to Harley, then I will be more than happy to put them to him for you. But my favorite entrance musics, I thought I'd do this one because a shout out to Carl King Woe. He actually recommended I do this, and it was so he has to take a lot of credit for this particular segment, including the top 10 favorite managers. It was something that was his idea that he would like to hear. And I'm going to start with number 12, which is Shinsuke Nakamura. Love that wrestling music. I absolutely love it. That music is just, I think everyone loves it. It's pretty awesome. Shawn Michaels, for obvious reasons. Ric Flair, that suits the gimmick at number 10. That's my number 10. It suits the gimmick absolutely perfectly. You would say that it should be probably higher on the list. Maybe it should, but like I say, this is what I came up with at the time. The Hardy Boys are coming in at number 9 because I think when they walk to the ring, their entrance music just tells a story in its own right. Everyone knows exactly what it is. My apologies. Number 8, Rick Martel. And I'm choosing the model Rick Martel's music here because I always found that Rick just had such an amazing character when he done the model, and I think it's very underrated that music just suited him so well. That essence, beautiful. That arrogance spray as well was just Just phenomenal. So Rick is my number 7, and Rick Rude is my number 6. I also think his music was phenomenal, especially in the WWE. The way he used to come out was just perfect. Number 5, I'm going with Kurt Angle. If there's music that didn't suit anybody more than Kurt, well then, I'd like to know. But I do believe that I have an idea of who it may be, and that is the Ultimate Warrior, who comes in at number 4. Love the Ultimate Warrior's music. If that didn't get you up and get you going, well then I do not know. Number 3, it's the immortal one, Hulk Hogan. Without a shadow of a doubt, Hulk Hogan has to be in that top 3. And then number 2, I went with Stone Cold Steve Austin. And at number 1, I've went with Bret the Hitman Hart. And the reason for Bret the Hitman Hart is because, as you all know, he was my favorite professional wrestler growing up. But also, I think that music was just the most legit piece of music that suited somebody. When you hear that, you just think of Bret, and that's it. Same with Austin, same with Hogan, same with Warren, same with all my top 12. That's why it's my top 12, because they're all phenomenal. But that's pretty much going to do it for Dynamo's Dozen this week, guys and girls. I hope you're all well. It's taken us all a couple of weeks, I think, to get back into the swing of things and back into a routine after that stupid snowstorm. And I hear that there's another one possibly on the way next week for Paddy's Day weekend. I hope not, because I hope you all get to go out and drink and be merry and enjoy yourselves. But what I would say is, just if that is the case, be safe, be aware, be vigilant of your surroundings, and just take care of my guys and girls, because I love y'all and I want you to keep listening to the show as well. Like I say, IanKelly800.podbean.com. Go and subscribe to the show. And also, go and subscribe on iTunes if you're Apple people. And we're also on every other good podcast provider as well. So, until next week, which I will make an announcement during the week of who my next guest is next week. I will make an announcement, I promise you. Until next week, stay safe, be vigilant, be humble, but also be good. And Dynamo is over and out.